third case of the day, the United States versus Lastima. Lastina. Mr. Namikas?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. Your Honors, last September was the first time in my career that I was granted the opportunity to address this Court, and Justice Rovner, you were there. At that time, I thanked you for the opportunity, thinking, well, this is it. It's never going to happen again. And yet, lo and behold, here I am again, and I still thank you for the opportunity. With respect to this case, Your Honors, before the order, the installment order of $2,000 a month towards restitution obligations that were imposed upon Ms. Lastina was entered, she didn't get a hearing. The government cited to the Federal Debt Collection Procedures Act, Section 3204 of Title 18, and the Mandatory Victims Restitution Act, Section 3664 of Title 18, as support for the court's authority to impose an installment payment order towards a restitution obligation. We don't have a problem with that. I do have a humble problem with respect to the Section 3204. I don't believe that that statute is applicable to Ms. Lastina, because there's nowhere in the record that would indicate that Ms. Lastina derived any substantial income or any income whatever from any self-employment or anything like that. But be that as it may, both statutes reference a hearing by the court to consider the economic condition of a defendant.
I'm trying to find where in your opening brief you argue that your client was deprived of a hearing.
I didn't say that she was deprived of a hearing, Your Honor, and that wasn't that. That's what the intention I'm giving right now is. That's not what I mean. What I'm saying is that I don't believe that the lower court had the opportunity, based on the information that was provided solely in the briefs and the information that was required by the defendant to provide to the government, to make an appropriate decision as to the appropriate amount of the monthly installment plan.
The information that the court had was accurate, though, wasn't it, in terms of the...
Well, Your Honor, I see there's a question as to whether or not it was accurate. To the best of her ability, Ms. Lastina filled out the forms that she was given by the probation department. She also added comments and explanations with asterisks throughout all of the forms, both in 2008 and 2009. Trying to explain certain aspects, because the forms didn't give you the opportunity to do so. Most importantly, the fact that her husband, Joe, had a sales salary/commission type of a job, which by its very nature provided a fluctuating salary. And again, we don't have any problem with the concept that taking into consideration the amount of restitution that, of a payment that should be made by the defendant, that you take into account the total income of the family. The fact is, though, is you have to know what it is so it doesn't cross the line into somehow or other forcing the spouse, the non-defendant spouse, to have to contribute, whether impliedly or directly.
But that's what we were
arguing in this particular case.
Is there any indication at all in the record that her husband is unwilling to pay nearly all of the household expenses?
Your Honor.
He's never objected to this arrangement in his wife's previous criminal proceedings. And are there any cases that would prevent the court from ordering 100% of her income in restitution if her spouse is able to fully support her?
Well, Your Honor, the closest case that comes to that point is the Corbett case cited by both the government and the appellant. And that was up to 75%. And that case was remanded to address the ambiguities of the district court's order with respect to what exactly was household cash flow. And that's the same thing here. But the point is, Judge, if you take a look at it from, and I certainly do not want to consider this to be any kind of a threat on Ms. Lestina's part, but when you think about it, as you said, there was no objection from Mr. Lestina to having to shoulder the entire burden of the household obligation, leaving every single penny that Ms. Lestina earns as a secretary to pay for her restitution. Your Honor, if you think, take a step back and think about it logically, then why should she go to work? I mean, the supervised release is over. The only income that she has is her job. The house that they own is owned by tenancy by the entirety, and under both Illinois and federal statutes, they can't attach her interest in a tenancy by the entirety situation.
Is she has an interest in some farm property?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, she has a one-third interest in a family parcel.
But that's
which
not by the entireties.
No, that's I believe that's tenancy in common, Your Honor. And sure, I believe that one-third of the farmland is owned by her. She doesn't derive any income from it. And sure, if the government wanted to force a partition, shall we say, and then sell it, okay, again, a practical matter, you can't divest her niece or her brother from owning their two-thirds share of the property. Who's going to buy a parcel of family-owned farmland at any price, and what are they going to do with it? As a practical matter, I doubt if they could, fine. That takes $80,000 off $22 million.
Yeah,
basically, Ms. Lestina is never going to pay this restitution off, even to the point when she's feeding worms, if you pardon the gross analogy. But the fact is, Your Honor, what...
I think the fact is, and I must say, Mr. Namika, you know, you're doing a wonderful job for your client, but this woman has more than $4,000 in disposable household income even after subtracting the $2,000 for restitution. And as you said, I mean, this woman, it's sort of nervy, isn't it? I mean, she owes $22+ million to the government, and she is complaining about paying $2,000 a month. She's so lucky to be
But the point is, Your Honor, yes, she owes $22 million, but she doesn't live in the Hamptons. She lives in Wilmington, Illinois, in a small little town. But she's not living
behind bars.
Well, she did for a while, Your Honor, and then she got out, and then she was subject to supervised release. The point is, after there's nothing that the government can do. This is now a civil proceeding. It's no longer a criminal proceeding, and there are no criminal penalties that can attach for failure. So she could tomorrow sit down and say, okay, fine, you want the $2,000, get it. I quit. Period. But the point is, Judge, you pointed out that of the six, she has $4,000 left over in disposable. That's the crux of the issue. That's why we were requesting a hearing. And that being is that both statutes stated the hearing could be held to offer evidence to give the court something to consider in fashioning an appropriate installment payment. Here, you've got the fluctuating salary. I mean, you don't know what their exactly monthly amount is. The government fixated on an amount, and then that was it.
But they can always, you know, the law provides for her to come back in if her husband's income should substantially drop, for example.
Well, Your Honor, the law also provides that at the time of sentencing, the judge should have entered an installment order as... right then and there. That wasn't done. She was told to pay the $22 million immediately. Well, obviously you can't do that, and later case law provided that even though, well, now that the trial court, the sentencing court will, it will enter an order, a schedule of payments at the time of sentencing. That didn't happen. But the point is, Your Honor...
What would you offer... to say that $48,000 a year disposable is too oppressive. That's what she would be left with. So what is it that you would bring forth to say that that...
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, I don't know if the $48,000 exactly would be what's disposable. Let's put it just... When you look at it in a final analysis, in 2008, assuming you accept the figures as being 100% accurate by the government, 2008, they have $5,800 in disposable income, and $1,000 a month is acceptable. 1 year later, $200 more in disposable income of $6,000. Now, $1,000 is no longer acceptable, $2,000 is. I mean, where is it going to stop? What's reasonable? And I think she should have the opportunity to testify before the court, particularly, and hold up her W-2s, which weren't available at the time this appeal was filed.
She has that opportunity if her husband's income drops. For example, you know, if her financial position shifts, if she's unable to meet her monthly household expense obligations, the MVRA provides the payment schedule may be altered. She can ask for a hearing.
Your Honor, I see that my time has expired. If I could just respond to your question. True. If Mr. Listina's salary drops, she can come back into court. But under the statute, she's required to do so if it goes up again. The point is that I think that if you have an evidentiary hearing based on a median analysis of, say, 5 years or whatever, you could come up with something that's a little bit more closer on point. And the fact is then she wouldn't be spending, I don't believe, her entire salary towards restitution, which I don't think is what was contemplated.
What if we have the hearing and the judge says $2,500?
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, then I look at my client and say, well, what are you going to do?
She's kind of aware of that risk potential.
Yes, she is. She's very well aware of it, Your Honor. But I don't believe that if the court heard all of the circumstances that a $2,500 a month payment would be imposed. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Giles?
May it please the court, counsel. The district court did not abuse its discretion in this matter and, in fact, entered an appropriate installment payment order for Ms. Listina to pay $2,000 per month toward her more than $22 million restitution obligation, based on a fully briefed motion and two separate and very detailed financial disclosures that Listina herself made to the court.
You know, Mr. Namikis made a very good argument as to incentive. What is her incentive to work at all if nearly everything goes to restitution? It seems the victims would, you know, end up on the worst end of the, if she loses, you know, all of her incentive to work.
Well, certainly the installment payment order is not limited solely to her income stream or her earnings from her job. It considers all of her resources, all of her assets, and significantly in this case she's got substantial equity in both her home, which is owned outright and unencumbered, and contrary to counsel's representation, tenancy by the entireties can be attached by a criminal restitution judgment lien is the same as a federal tax lien. Additionally, she's got this one-third interest in the Vint Farm LLC, which is a family farm that she's valued that interest as solely hers at $80,000. So, you know, I suppose there is the alternative that he suggested. We could go and execute against those assets, and quite frankly, the installment payment order was kind of the least onerous of those options at this juncture. But we certainly have cumulative collection remedies and would be prepared to exercise those if, when, and as necessary. But this matter was fully heard on paper. There's no need for an additional argument. All of the arguments that he's made here today were presented in the briefs. This argument about fluctuation on her husband's income, what was noted on the probation report that she submitted, and in fact, the facts in the record on that actually would support our position, because at the defendant's appendix, page 32, indicates, you know, the spouse had an extraordinary income month in July 2009, but that compared to normal months would be $2,000 less, and based on those figures still indicates his normal month would be $7,145 in earnings. So, but again, the installment payment order is not focused solely on the earnings. It's considering the totality of the circumstances, all of the resources of the household. And it is an appropriate installment payment order under these facts and these circumstances. As Your Honor aptly noted, there is a safety valve in both the Federal Debt Collection Procedures Act and the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act that would permit the defendant to come back to court and advise of any material change in her circumstances to seek an adjustment of the payment order. And so one other note, you know, there's been much made about whether she had a hearing, and although this argument was not raised in the district court or addressed in our brief before you today, I would just note, because this court can affirm on any grounds the law or record permit, there is a minute order whereby the court set the briefing schedule, and that's in the record at 78, the defendant's appendix, page 7. And that order setting the briefing schedule clearly indicated no hearing had been scheduled, no hearing would be had. It stated target date for ruling by mail set by December 24th, 2009. And so at that juncture, the defendant did not request a hearing. Again, in the response that was filed as part of that briefing schedule, the prayer for relief in that response does not request a hearing. So I don't know what more there was to be heard. It was fully presented in the briefs to the court. So unless there are any additional questions.
So do you contend that Ms. Lestina has forfeited her argument about the lack of a hearing?
I believe so. I mean, I'm presenting that today, yes, although that was not included in our brief prior to today.
What changed that caused the modification of the restitution order from $1,000 to $2,000 a month?
In part, her sustained ability to meet that payment without any difficulty, as well as I think initially there may have been even a mathematical error. If you go back to the 2008 statement and look at the total income or earnings less the expenses and liabilities, which are few. I mean, we're not talking about a big margin of difference here where she would need this additional money to meet her household expenses.
But the income didn't increase substantially, did it?
No. I think generally if you look both at the September 2009 probation report as well as the financial statement she submitted to the Department of Justice in November 2008, they would show an average income of $8,350, the average monthly expenses of $2,140, and an average then left over as disposable is $6,209. And that's
so,
on both statements.
Ms. Giles, is your position that the government just didn't come forth originally with a figure that was what they thought was appropriate?
I think it probably should have been higher from the get-go, frankly. If there are no other questions, I'd ask that you affirm the order of the district court.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Giles. Mr. Namikas, your time has expired, but you may have an additional minute if you have any rebuttal.
Your Honor, as you noted, my time did expire, and I would just like to thank the court for its opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Giles, Ms. Schroeder. The case is taken under advisement.